In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Thursday, November 17th, 2011 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's Industry Chatter. And my guest is Jim Mears of Motorola. And Jim, we were talking, first of all, welcome. It's good to have you back on the program.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
We were talking before we went on the air that you were here in January of this year, right after your company. There was a split in Motorola. Talk about what happened there, because there's I still run into a lot of folks that don't know what happened there or don't know all the details.
Yeah, sure. So Motorola, Inc. split in, as you said, Francis, into two different companies. Mm-hmm. Motorola Solutions, which I'm part of, and then the other business, CEO Sanjay Jha, who we brought over about a year and a half ago. Our CEO, Greg Brown, actually hired Sanjay, split the company off into Motorola Mobility. So they're really the ones that you would think of when you think about cell phones, when you think about your cable set-top boxes.
Mm-hmm.
Motorola Solutions, the organization that I'm part of, is really focused on business, public safety, and federal government communications, whether that be voice, data, video. That's really our sweet spot and what we're focused on moving forward.
There's still a lot of folks that say, oh, Motorola, they got sold to Google. And what the part that you're talking about is the other piece with the set-top boxes and cell phones.
Exactly. So it was a pending acquisition where Google's going to be buying Motorola Mobility. I'm not sure when that's scheduled to close, but that news has been out there for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
Not completed yet. I want to say I remember reading in a press release maybe sometime the end of the year, first of next year, but it looks like that's moving forward. I think there's some SEC things they're working through right now.
When you were here before, we talked about how that might impact your business, and your response to that was it's going to make us stronger because we're going to be able to focus on this core of things as you just talked about. Is that what you're seeing so far?
Yeah, absolutely. I think as a smaller, more nimble, more focused company on mission-critical communications, you know, really making products that help people be their best in moments that matter is really our tagline and what our mission is all about, whether that's for the business and enterprise or whether that's for federal government or state and local government. But we're putting about $1 billion a year of research and development into new products, new applications, new content to drive solutions that are related to topics that are still extremely important to us and our customers, and that's interoperability. That's the next generation command center. As I'm sure you're aware, Francis, there's a big move with social media. Next generation 911, the 911 call can come in a lot of different forms today compared to, you know, just on your phone in the past where you had your Annie Alley, your automatic number, automatic location information.
When you were here before, I normally don't have folks come back as quickly as I brought you back, but I wanted to talk to you because just in the time since you've been here in January, I'm seeing and hearing about a shift in particularly in communications devices, where devices are going from a more hardware-based approach where you buy a radio and it communicates with this group of people to software-based devices that are almost like smartphones, in some cases actually are smartphones, and the network is built around a smartphone-type capability where the device almost doesn't matter as long as it runs a particular operating system. And it might be an open operating system like an Android, or it might be proprietary that you design for a particular customer. Are you participating in that? Are you seeing that kind of trend as well?
Yeah, a couple of things. One is you're absolutely right. The radios that a firefighter or a police officer or a federal law enforcement agent would use today, there is a lot of software that's, quite frankly, squirted into the radio. So it's very much a software engine. The software also allows us to do some things today that we certainly couldn't have done in the past. Allows them to work across disparate systems on different frequency bands. And to your listening audience, that just means they can talk to systems that in the past, they probably would have had to have two or three devices to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Now they can do it with one. The other thing I think you brought out a really good point, the consumerization or some of the features that you see in consumer-type products are certainly going to become more prevalent in mission-critical type devices, because this next generation of law enforcement leaders and people that are out there, you know, on the front lines for our communities, for our states, and for our country, they're used to all these different interfaces.
Mm-hmm.
So our innovation is really wrapped around delivering that type of enriched content on a mission-critical device so that it's not just push-to-talk. Granted, they have to have that, but it's the rich data application, whether it's pulling video from an incident scene that you're heading towards or you're pulling up mapping information for a building where you're getting ready to go fight a fire.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's an exciting time right now in wireless. It's certainly complicated technology, and again, that's why we continue to invest in innovation and R&D at a more aggressive clip than many of our competitors.
You have a 25, 30-year-old firefighter or emergency responder. That person's been used to using a smartphone for 3, 4, 5 years now, and you put a device in that person's hand that's similar to the phone that they use, even if it's a proprietary thing, it's second nature, and they just start using that thing like they've always used it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in fact, that is our tagline for our mission-critical devices, devices that are second nature, and that's easy to say and harder to deliver.
Yeah.
But certainly developing those user interfaces where it becomes intuitive, where you don't have to think about, okay, in my training session, I remembered how that device needs to be used. It really, as you said, becomes second nature.
Yeah. You mentioned interoperability earlier on, and you kind of alluded to something when you were talking about the ability of various people to be able to speak to other people that they might not have been able to. I think when you were here before, we talked about my past history eons ago working at Radio Shack and selling crystals to people to put in crystal radios, which 30 years ago was what you had to do.
Absolutely.
Is that what you're talking about there?
Yeah, those days, fortunate for those of us that grew up in sales and would make mistakes and put the wrong channels in the radios and would have to pay our local service shop about $500 to make that fix. Now it can, with a cable, you can put it on your PC and have the AES-256 encryption wrapped around it to make sure you're putting the right stuff and then it's secure. So, yeah, that part of it has become much more efficient and, again, can talk across a multitude of bands and a multitude of systems, which is good for the end user.
What are the layers of security like, though, that have to go into these devices? Pretty thick, I imagine.
Yeah, it really depends, number one, on the user. The federal government has absolutely led that effort, of which I think you'll see state and local governments start to follow suit in.
Mm-hmm.
The federal government's done a tremendous job of developing and driving manufacturers like Motorola to make products to their stringent security standards. We've helped with the innovation, as have other companies, and it doesn't really give you a device that only one manufacturer can deliver. They can still continue to compete those devices, but you'll certainly see state and locals follow suit and start to have more of that in their network and in their devices moving forward.
All right. The first I word you used was interoperability, and now the second one there, innovation. I hear people in government at the agencies all the time talk about innovation. We want industry to bring us innovation, innovation, innovation. Are they getting better, the agencies overall? I'm not going to ask you to pick on any particular one. Are they getting better at telling you or giving you some guidance as to what directions they want to see that innovation go? Or is it just show us something cool like it seemed to be for a long time?
No, I would say today in 2011, we as a company and our customers have come a long way in really driving the innovation that our customers are looking for. And obviously there's that piece that customers sometimes don't know what they don't know,
mm-hmm.
which means, wow, I didn't realize that piece of technology could actually do that. That's really inventive. But certainly as you take a look at mobile broadband for federal government or state and local government, and as we've talked about the content that needs to be delivered to the mobile worker, the type of development and the way they want to see those devices, I can tell you without really getting specifics, because we haven't released a product, we're gonna have a product release that is a direct reflection of input from the federal government and how we're building that product. And quite frankly, really changed the roadmap.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a better idea in how we integrate something that's very important to them. So that's exciting to me.
Those oh wow moments where people see something that they didn't know was possible will always happen. But I'm still wondering whether the agencies are getting a better, giving you better guidelines or maybe narrowing, you have this whole landscape and whether they're getting better at narrowing that focus for you a little bit.
Yeah, well, I tell you what I am seeing from a procurement process point of view, it does certainly seem that especially in the federal government, they're doing a much better job of vetting potential competitors for a particular solution up front and then kind of seeing what the market looks like and what the technology can deliver and how close it gets to meeting their needs. And then having a smaller competition, you still have a multitude of people you can pick from on, as you, I'm sure you're aware of, a multi-vendor IDIQ.
Mm-hmm.
But having a better framework of, now that we understand what can be done, now we can issue a more effective RFP
mm-hmm.
and then pick multiple vendors upon which we can compete for future procurements.
All right. One issue that's there is requirements, and we'll talk a little bit about requirements when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Jim Mears of Motorola Solutions, my guest, and we'll continue our conversation in a moment.
To make a commitment is to see things through, confident that no matter what the obstacles, we can build something better together. With the planned combination of AT&T and T-Mobile, we're making a commitment to create a stronger network for all our customers. We will invest an additional $8 billion and build out the next generation of mobile broadband to nearly everyone in America. Building that network will mean better coverage, better call quality, and faster downloads. But it will also create as many as 96,000 American jobs. And we will begin bringing 5,000 jobs to America from overseas. We're committed to investing in America now. Why? Well, we know it's good business. Because America has always been, and always will be, a smart investment. AT&T. Rethink possible.
Do you know us? You count on our technology every day. The office elevator that takes you up and down efficiently. The jet engine that gets you home safely. The fire suppression system you hope you never need, but know is there. You count on things we make to protect you from harm, and even to keep you cool and comfortable. Our technologies are a critical part of your everyday life. Yet many people don't even know who we are. Our name is United Technologies. We are Carrier, Hamilton Sunstrand, Otis, Pratt & Whitney, Sikorsky, and UTC Fire and Security. Six businesses united as one powerful company. In fact, we are one of the largest manufacturers in the United States, which likely makes us the biggest company you've never heard of, even though you depend on us every single day. United Technologies. Get to know more about us at UTC.com.
Quest Government Services is now CenturyLink Government. CenturyLink is positioned to support your mission objectives and provide you with an enhanced product and service portfolio. With our global reach, expanded nationwide network, and strong financial standing, we are the partner for IT leaders looking toward a stronger, more connected tomorrow. Your link to the future begins here. See the benefits of partnering with us at CenturyLink.com/federal.
You may not need storage that can withstand the world's harshest conditions, but why risk your mission on anything else? The NetApp FAS 2000 series enables your agency to deploy storage in a smaller, powerful, cost-effective footprint. It's proven in the toughest operating environments on Earth. Delivered by NetApp partners like IronBrick, with expertise in cloud computing and infrastructure convergence, IronBrick designs and implements scalable, efficient solutions for modern data centers. Don't settle. Put your storage solution to the test with a 10-question assessment at NetAppGov.com.
I'm Amy Morris. Here's a look at Friday's Federal Drive. The Cybersecurity Education Council strikes a deal with the Department of Education to promote more formal cybersecurity training. And it's time to think about your healthcare options. A special Federal Drive discussion panel to help you navigate open season. That and more Friday morning at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. For all the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Jim Mears of Motorola Solutions, my guest on Industry Chatter today. We talked and mentioned briefly before the break, talking about requirements. One of the things I imagine is critical in when you're talking about the things that your company does is making sure that the end users are connected to the acquisition process, especially requirements writing, but development too. Are agencies getting better at shortening that track and connecting you and your development team directly with the end users rather than that used to be kind of partitioned off where once the requirements were written, you really dealt with the project manager rather than the actual end users?
Yeah, I guess I'd answer your question in two parts. I would say certainly in some agencies and departments, there's been a concentrated effort to improve that. And for a couple of reasons. One, I think it gives them a better feel up front for what the technology can do. And are they really addressing the right problem? Or at the end of the day, are they going to have a product or solution that doesn't solve the problem they thought they were trying to solve to begin with? Mm-hmm. So I certainly think you see a move in that direction across government. There are certainly some agencies and departments that are ahead of others in coming up with efficient ways of doing that and working with technology companies and application providers. But hey, you could say the same thing on the private business side. We certainly struggle with doing that the right way, and we want to compete for something new and make sure we've got the requirements document clearly done so that as the project or the solution is being implemented, there aren't a whole lot of oh wows from a negative point of view. Like, gosh, we forgot to cover that. Yeah. I also think it's our job, if we do a good enough job of understanding the problem, knowing the customer and what they're really trying to accomplish with the mission, that we can bring some value and maybe differentiate ourselves to point things out. Still certainly have to compete, but I think when you're competing, at the end of the day, if you have value, but yet you've brought rich content and maybe a certain amount of expertise, some value added, if you will, that you might get the nod on some projects because you were the best choice, whether that be us or somebody else on a deal we're competing for.
Now, along those lines, are you seeing as many value contracts, best value contracts as before, or are they starting, are some lowest price technically acceptable deals starting to show up that are a little bit more difficult to try to compete?
I would say in the space that that we compete for, price is very important, but I would say the government usually makes, at least the spaces that we compete in, for the most part, are making best value decisions. Now, if you're priced out of the ballpark, forget about it. You're not going to get it, and you shouldn't get it. But if you're close, and as you described, best value, I would say the government's making the right choice. And more times than not, we're the beneficiary of that, but we don't win every deal. But I would say it's definitely moved in, it's still in the best value for technology plays.
And you actually kind of anticipated my next question, which is, are the agencies getting still improving on an upward track when it comes to being able to discern best value, where my solution and your solution might be, you might get there two completely different ways, and how do you weigh those out and make sure that you're getting the best value?
I will say this. I'm always extremely impressed with, as it relates to technology, again, in the fields that, that we compete for, extremely impressed with the talent level, the commitment, and the hard work of the people that we work with that evaluate our products, proposals, and solutions. Technically, they can talk the talk with our brightest and best engineers. They challenge us as they should, and a lot of times, whether it's us or somebody else, it actually spurs innovation that might not only be relevant in the federal space, but could be relevant in mission-critical enterprise business, like a big orange box retailer up the street, or in state and local government. So certainly the government definitely drives value, but I think they also drive innovation, and their history is rich with that.
The driving innovation part, and we touched on innovation a little bit earlier, but that's that. So many agencies are asking it, demanding it now, and yet we hear innovation, and we just talked about price and how important price is. Where does innovation fit in the budget situation that we're in today? For a long time, I think people thought innovation and price were opposites, and you couldn't have one and have the other.
Yeah. The requirements are pretty well defined. They want innovation, but they want it at today's market rate or even better. And it's really a fair argument to some degree, because if you look at reengineering government, we're in pretty tough economic times still. Revenues are not way off the charts in a good way. So you look at reengineering, which you have available today, it's really about mobilizing the worker and having him be able to do more things with more productive tools. And we think we're leaders in mobilizing the mobile worker. And that requirement and what's going on in the marketplace today is really helping us drive innovation from the standpoint of the devices they use, how they use them, as we've talked about, the content that we can deliver those devices, whether it's a ruggedized tablet with a screen that you could drop a bowling ball on and not break, but making sure you're delivering the right content to the right people at the right time when they need it. So I hate to keep going back to innovation, but really those are who the winners are going to be.
Yeah.
Yesterday's news isn't going to win.
That's right. The whole budget thing, what effect has that had on your business broadly?
It's been difficult. We've continued to grow, as an organization, both in the government space and the enterprise space, but it's definitely tougher. It's tougher to find the dollars, the available spend has certainly shrunk. Hopefully, you know, relative terms, that's short term, but right now it's here today. So it's really puts a lot more focus and energy in putting your best value on every deal, because you have to win more deals to stay flat with some type of growth. But the fact that we're in this mobility play and people are trying to do more with less actually plays into companies that are kind of in that sweet spot. So that part of us, I guess, is a positive working force right now.
Jim Mears of Motorola Solutions is my guest on Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll continue this conversation when we return.
The Cloud Conundrum, public-private or both. A panel discussion with experts from government and industry sponsored by Brocade. Panelist Chris Smith, CIO of USDA.
Internally, we stood up our own private cloud offerings as we were doing data center consolidation. I started out by saying it was an evolution. 2 years ago, we knew the value that was in sharing compute, getting higher virtualization levels, getting a more secure platform. So we've been on that path. We've seen a 60% reduction in operating expenses. And that's huge. And we look at our rates every year to say, okay, are we competitive within the government space? We're cross-servicing other folks.
Cloud innovations are here. Is your network optimized? Accelerate to the cloud with Brocade's new technology and business models. Brocade's cloud-optimized solutions provide a foundation to help organizations migrate to private clouds. What does this mean to your agency? Increased utilization, simplified management, and an agile organization. That's why Brocade solutions are used in over 90% of global 1,000 data centers. Learn how Brocade will transition your organization to a virtualized world. Go to federalnewsradio.com, search cloud. Is video technology critical to your agency mission? Then make plans now to attend Government Video Expo. November 29th through December 1st at the Washington Convention Center in D.C., Government Video Expo is the largest gathering of video production, broadcast, and AV professionals in the East. Hear former White House videographer Arun Chaudhry speak about capturing the White House from behind the lens and learn how the DOT has used video to communicate with the public from Transportation Public Affairs Specialist Justine Adelisi. Walk the show floor to discover the latest technology from over 100 exhibitors. Get your hands on AV gear, storage solutions, and software from brands like Panasonic, Canon, JVC, and more. Network with cross-sector colleagues and learn how they're moving their agencies and businesses forward in these challenging times. Log on now to gvexpo.com for details. Register with the code 1500AM for a free exhibit hall pass and conference discounts. That's gvexpo.com. Register with code 1500AM. Don't miss the Government Video Expo.
We raise high for GW basketball. Some raise high with the jump out of your seat, buzzer beating, hands to the sky scream. Others give their all in the GW fight song, Raising High the Buff and Blue. Raising High is more than just a movement. It's the movement for Colonials basketball, where senders and students, friends and families come together for the thrill of victory. Raise high with GW basketball today. Call 202-994-7325 or visit gwsports.com now.
The questionable prostate supplement. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Can vitamin E supplements reduce men's risk of prostate cancer? Early studies indicated a reduced risk, but a more in-depth study later found no change in risk. And now a large study of men who took large doses indicates a risk of something worse. Researchers in the latest study followed about 35,000 men for 18 months after they stopped taking supplements. Dr. Eric Klein of the Cleveland Clinic.
Men who took vitamin E alone at 400 international units a day, in addition to a normal diet, were at a 17% higher risk of developing prostate cancer.
Dr. Klein says people should look for solid evidence about supplements. The study in the Journal of the American Medical Association was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join host Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Visit myvillagegreen.com. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Garden of Life and Himalaya Herbal Healthcare.
Headed to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor, Federal News Radio can be heard crystal clear on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. It's the same great station, just on an added frequency. Get the latest news about the federal government and government contractors. Hear exclusive interviews with the movers and shakers in the federal arena. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Jim Mears of Motorola Solutions, my guest on Industry Chatter today. And you can hear this conversation posted online later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com. We talked a little bit about budgets. As budgets tighten, how do you plan around such an unknown quantity as we have when it comes to continuing resolutions. Budgets not done. We actually, it looks like a couple agencies will get budgets here before too long, but I think that's only six out of the 13 spending bills that will be finished. I'm obviously not asking for trade secrets, but how do you strategize in an environment like that?
Yeah, that's a very difficult environment. The scenario that we're in, that you just painted, at the end of the day, there are some projects that your customer may want to have you compete for and move forward, but there's not a funding stream. Mm-hmm. So it just, quite frankly, gets put on hold. Now, certainly every agency and department still has, you know, operating and maintenance budget. And there is a move to maybe not capitalize some of the acquisitions that in the past they would have capitalized and take a look at more of an operating expense, kind of a hosted model, mm-hmm. if you will. And we're certainly doing that with some of the agencies. That can help in the short term, quite frankly, the long term, because also when you end up hosting, whether it's hardware, software, or both, the upgrade really would fall on us, the supplier, whoever the winner of the particular opportunity is. And that's good for the end user. Whether it's 5 years, 7 years, 10 years, they don't have to be as concerned about that big iron change out 5 years from now or that big software upgrade 5 years from now, because it's really all on our nickel as Motorola Solutions to provide that. But, hey, at the end of the day, if there is no budget and you're in a CR, we certainly have customers, agencies, departments that, quite frankly, just can't act in the way they like to act and the way we'd like to compete for.
And that's, I imagine, puts agencies in kind of a tough spot because they have to think about life cycle costs. They obviously want to buy the best deal they can for 10, 15 years. Some of these systems will be able to run. At the same time, that's not necessarily anywhere near the cheapest option at this point in time, and that's a consideration too, I suppose.
That is a consideration. And you brought up earlier, Francis, the piece about the software versus it being all hardware, and it was tough to really modify or change anything in the past. The one thing with the systems being more software-centric is we all know software continues to be very inventive. It continues to accelerate. The thing about putting it back on the vendor side, the Motorola solution side, is we keep up with that for a firm fixed price. Like I said, whether it's 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, 10 years, we'll quite frankly negotiate whatever's in the best interest of the customer, come mm-hmm. up, hopefully with the value that meets both of our goals and needs moving forward. But it is a more assured way for a customer to really understand what his total cost of ownership is going to be as it relates to the hardware, as I said, the software, the support services, and we're talking mission critical gear that, quite frankly, in the event of an event, is going to be more strained because the public networks are likely to be very heavily loaded. So they're going to rely on their private networks. They're usually backed up with generators. They're usually redundancy with the central controllers so that if you lose one site, your system still continues to operate mm-hmm. and you don't lose that connectivity to these very important people in the field. So a lot goes on, but that's kind of where we are today as it relates to that.
Now, you mentioned mobile. We've talked a lot about mobile technology and the devices themselves, but you just used the term mobile networks that I think is fascinating because it wasn't very long ago that you just weren't physically able or technologically able to pick up a whole network and move it someplace else. And I suppose some of that's being driven by the demands of some of the war zones and the users in DOD, but we're also seeing that, I suppose, in other areas of mobile technology.
I mean, you certainly see that being driven by DOD, some very creative and aggressive thought process and what they need to do to deliver rich content to the soldier on the ground, to the boots on the ground, to mm-hmm. quite frankly deliver the kind of content we're talking about delivering through 4G. But where are those soldiers going to be? So you have to take that into account. And then you also have to be able to deploy these mobile networks wherever we need to have our brave men and women deployed. So you do that through a host of different technologies. But the main thing is you also have to get that content back to a central command somewhere so they can also see what's going on and that information can be shared back and forth. But again, some tremendous innovation that's usually driven through the Department of Defense that ends up in some form or fashion, or usually a reduced form or fashion, seeing its place in the enterprise space, seeing its place in state and local government. If you go back years ago and you look at some of the innovation that took place around the NASA program and some of the things that we did there as far as push-to-talk, release-to-listen from very long distances and delivering data, a lot of innovation there ended up showing up in products a decade later for people like you and I and for state and local governments.
What difference will 4G technology make for the non-cellular type user, if any?
Yeah. So the 4G technology that you hear a lot about D-block, when you hear D-block, That's really going to be spectrum that will deliver 4G LTE, which is long-term evolution, but it's the same thing you see the carriers advertising.
Mm-hmm.
It's much richer, much faster. I don't know if you've used the 4G network here in DC yet, but you can actually, it's a noticeable, appreciable difference in the speed of which you get that content back to you.
Mm-hmm.
So for people in federal law enforcement, state and local government, when they show up at a scene, as opposed to seeing bits and bytes and a distorted picture of a really difficult situation, you've probably seen where the digital pixels sometimes can become distorted and your picture isn't clear.
Mm-hmm.
You look at that on a 4G network with the proper coverage and built for mission critical applications, that picture becomes as clear as you and I looking at each other right now here in your office. And it's full motion. You can be delivering the kind of content in the background that you need to go along with that picture. You can provide management of that video to the mobile worker in the field if he wants to pull video content from another camera, or if he wants to pull mapping or other information that in the past, quite frankly, you couldn't get to mobile device. It was too rich, too bandwidth intensive, and you just couldn't deliver it. You'll be able to do those things.
And I imagine then you'll be able to do things like lay maps and other kinds of grids over top of that video and to be able to figure out how you want to try to divide responsibilities or whatever.
You'll be able to do exactly what you just described. You'll be able to map out where the firefighters are inside of a difficult situation on that building map, manage those very precious and brave resources in a much more effective manner and keep track of where they are. So, yeah, the things that you're describing here are here today with 4G technology. We need the D-block. Hopefully Congress is going to move forward before the end of the year with funding and D-block, and our customers need the D-block.
Mm-hmm. What else do your customers need as far as resources to be able to deploy some of the technologies that you're talking about?
Money. They need funding along with spectrum. It's not a small undertaking to start competing for and building out a mission-critical 4G network across the country, and obviously in the most populated areas first, and you prioritize like you would with anything else. Mm-hmm. But there obviously has to be funding tied to that spectrum for us to really move forward in a productive way for our first responder community, whether it's federal, state, and local out there.
How close are we to the edge of this? When we first started talking about this, not you and I necessarily, but just in this community, started talking about this, what we now think of as 3G, which is what my phone and most folks that I know, that's how their phones operate. That was regarded as really cutting edge, and this is what we've seen in technology for 50 years. What looks like cutting edge today is no longer cutting edge a year from now or 2 years from now. But it seems to me, with some of the capabilities that we're talking about, how much faster does the video need to get? How much more clear does the video need to get on a mobile device? How much more layering capability do you need to have? How much more interoperability do you need to have? And that's what makes me wonder if we're not pushing the edge if we haven't gotten there yet. Or am I not thinking about it right?
No, I think you're absolutely thinking about it right. So let's just kind of take a look at where we are today, because you're right. Technology is always going to continue to evolve and move forward. But I think where we are right now with 4G technology and trying to roll that out for the federal space, for state and local government, in a shared type of approach, that what we always wanted to have was the ability to really have that HD video out there, to have this rich content delivered to a mobile device. In the past, the technology was not to a point where we could do that. We could do bits and bytes of it, but we really couldn't deliver it the way it can be delivered to your desktop today.
Mm-hmm.
Now we can deliver it as if you're sitting at your desk. That's a huge leap forward compared to where we've been over the last decade. So now the next big step, as opposed to another technology innovation, is to start rolling that out. And you're going to see also, I think, the other big piece is a combined approach between mission-critical private 4G LTE and partnerships with the carriers. There's going to be a blended approach where both of them come together. Number one, you invest your money better that way. Mm-hmm. You take advantage of those excellent carrier-based public networks that are out there today. But mission-critical users certainly have their own unique requirements that when they have to have bandwidth, they absolutely have to have it. They can't sit there and wait because all sites are busy. They have to have it. So a combination of those two, and then the mission-critical type of talk applications that in the past – eventually, you'll be able to run those applications on LTE network. Is it today or the next 5 years? I'm not sure, but certainly that's in the roadmap moving forward.
Yeah. The reason I ask you that is because I think about from a personal as well as a professional level, it used to be that you would look at a technology, even when it was pretty fresh, and say, well, I know we can't do it yet, but it will be cool when we can do blank. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's generational, if because I'm getting older and I don't think about things in the same way that I used to or what. But I don't see that when I look at a lot of these technologies, because I look at things now and I go, that's pretty good. And it's harder. It's getting harder for me and getting harder for some of the folks that I know, including some pretty smart folks who do this on a regular basis, who do it for a living, to think about what the next great thing could possibly be. And that's why I ask about that edge and where you think we might be compared to it.
Yeah, I think you'll also see when you talk about that, a lot of that innovation will be around the devices and how that content's delivered, because nobody was making those devices necessarily in the past the way they want to use them, because the bandwidth in the pipe didn't exist to deliver that content. So why go develop a wireless device that does that? I think you'll see a whole lot of innovation around the dongles and the devices moving forward that interact and interface with the end users the way they really need them to. And I don't think there'll be necessarily one winning form factor. I think you'll certainly see form factor and human interface and the people that tend to get that more right than wrong being big winners in this space. Because let's say a firefighter with big gloves on, and if he's looking at something right before he goes in the building, he's probably not going to have a device like we're used to, because the first time he drops on the concrete, that device isn't going to do him a whole lot of good.
That's right.
So it's got to be rugged. It's got to have the types of buttons and interface that he can actually make that device usable. Mm-hmm. So a whole lot of work on that end. And then also, Francis, as you build these networks out, and they become more fully utilized, the other big piece is you have to continue to build capacity. You still have to build additional 4G capacity. You have to build more sites where your network is being leveraged at a higher rate than maybe more rural areas. Mm-hmm. There's a lot into the design that's also, to me, part of the innovation that as we move forward, you'll see the winning companies get it right more than the others do.
I know capacity is expensive to build, but I guess the good news of that equation is it's also a known quantity. You know, if you invest this much, you get this much capacity. Is that fair to say?
That's absolutely fair to say. And I think you'll see on the private side, most networks really being built out for the mission critical needs, and for day in, day out, there'll be some offloading onto the public networks that, quite frankly, will be good for their carriers as well.
Jim Mears of Motorola Solutions, my guest on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. When we come back, I want to talk more about that end user transformation that you referred to. And we'll do that on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM in just a moment.
You may not need storage that can withstand the world's harshest conditions, but why risk your mission on anything else? The NetApp FAS 2000 series enables your agency to deploy storage in a smaller, powerful, cost-effective footprint. It's proven in the toughest operating environments on Earth. Delivered by NetApp partners like Merlin International, Merlin's dynamic data center solution provides agencies with the framework to meet their mission requirements. Don't settle. Put your storage solution to the test with a 10-question assessment at netappgov.com.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. Please join me this week for my special guest, Mark Gold of The Gold Group, who advises affluent individuals and family-owned businesses on insurance needs. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
How would you like up to $50 out of the blue? That's the wellness incentive from the Blue Cross Blue Shield Federal Employee Program. Complete our Blue Health Assessment and get up to $50 for qualified medical expenses. $50 out of the blue. Who knew? To learn more about the Federal Employee Program, visit whonew.fepblue.org or call 1-800-411-BLUE.
Newsmakers, talk to Jared Serbu on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Doug Lavero, the director of the Air Force's Space and Missile Systems Center.
The innovation in commercial SATCOM is not in the service. It's in the deal that we will make. And the business deal we will make is where we need to concentrate our neurons in to try to figure out how to provide better commercial SATCOM service.
Hear the entire interview online at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Jim Mears of Motorola Solutions. We talked about the end users and the transformation that you're seeing in the marketplace there. Are your teams and our teams across industry getting better at communicating with the end users, not just in government, but everywhere? You used the example of the firefighter with the big gloves on and all that. And I mentioned during the break, the vision, the mental picture that I have of the firefighter with the big gloves trying to fat finger an iPad or something like that just isn't practical.
No.
And the pattern used to be, it seems to me at least, as outsider looking in, we're going to create this great device, and then the end user can figure out how to incorporate it into his or her routine, workday. That's kind of been turned on its ear, hasn't it?
It sure has. And just to take it one step further to give you an example today, we just recently introduced a new tablet called the ET1, Enterprise Tablet 1, our first-generation tablet with the open Android system is his main operating system. So a lot of value to be in there. And it's really, first and foremost, was a retail-driven product driven by some of our big retail customers. But as we really started putting this product together, we started taking a look at some of the federal requirements that would be required, not necessarily to replace a Motorola Zoom or an Apple iPad, but some of the mission-centric, mission-specific type of applications that a smaller device, a more rugged device with, as you said, the human interface features that actually make it easier to use with things like transflective technology, which I'm sure you're familiar with. You take a typical computer screen in the sun, you can't see it.
Mm-hmm.
Transflective screens allow you to see the screen as good or better than you did inside.
Mm-hmm.
Those things are usually more than consumerization type of features, but they're required. If you have a Customs and Border Protection agent out there and he's in the middle of the hot sun, he needs to be able to see his screen.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to be able to either take a picture, do full motion video of you, the person that he just got, be able to send that information over the 4G broadband network back to whoever needs to see that, converse back and forth. If he needs data sent back to him and on a device that meets his mission, and then he can drop on the desert floor, he can drop on concrete and be able to pick it up. So to go back to the root of your question, it's extremely competitive out there. The companies that it sounds overly simple, but that listen to the customers actively, not just listen, but listen actively and sometimes actually read between the lines of what they're looking for. As I said before, sometimes customers don't know what they don't know, so they don't know everything to ask for.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that get that the most right are going to be the big winners. And there's evidence without going into it of companies out there today, either on the consumer side that certainly got it absolutely right beyond what you or I probably would have thought possible, and there's some pretty big failures out there.
Mm-hmm.
So when you talk about the federal government worker, whether it be somebody in the United States Postal Service or a Customs and Border Protection agent or somebody at DOD, the people that get it right with the right features, with the right durability, and the right content are going to be the winners.
What is the commoditization of technology and the consumerization of technology doing to your business, particularly when it comes to applications? Because I think most people who are familiar with a mobile device, their concept of an app is either free or 99 cents when it comes to pricing. And it's hard for me to imagine, even in an enterprise environment, that's a model that's real easy for you to monetize.
Yeah, it is, and it's difficult to compete against. It's certainly making our razor's edge much sharper.
Uh-huh.
And quite frankly, there's going to be some bleed over. There's going to be some consumer devices that do fit the bill for what in the past may have been a purpose-built device. But
mm-hmm.
there's still so many things in particular mission-centric type applications, whether it's enterprise, federal government, state, and local, that consumer devices just don't meet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're not durable enough, the user interface in the way it needs to be. So the people, to me, that get that the most right, well, also with the right security wrapped around it. I mean, that is so important in this day and age, whether that's federal-based or state and local-based. Security is paramount importance. And the information that's shared across those disparate databases and the devices that hang from those,
mm-hmm.
they all have to be wrapped with the same security so that network and that information that you're sharing stays secured.
Jim Mears of Motorola Solutions, my guest. We'll wrap up today's industry chatter in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Thank you.
If you're a federal employee, it's time to choose your health insurance plan. So now's a good time to know about a different health plan that actually rewards you for living healthy. It's called Healthy Blue, and it's the next generation of health benefits from CareFirst Blue Choice. Healthy Blue rewards you with no-cost office visits, x-rays, lab tests, and preventative screenings, plus no referrals. And how's this for a reward? After switching to Healthy Blue, families can earn up to $700 towards their deductible and individuals $300. Healthy Blue is a new and positive approach to health care, and it's one more example of how committed CareFirst is to working with you and your doctor to help you on the road to good health. Visit HealthyBlueRewards.com to see how easy it is to earn up to $700 now and save even more through the years. Then take greater control of your costs and your health by choosing Healthy Blue from CareFirst. You, your doctor, and CareFirst. A healthy relationship.
From the CareFirst Blue Cross Blue Shield family of healthcare plans, an independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association, some no-cost benefits and rewards are only available through your Blue Choice PCP.
Donating to United Way of the National Capital Area and its charities is an easy way to champion a cause. With every payroll deduction, you can be a knight in shining armor battling childhood diabetes or illiteracy, or a fairy godmother granting job skills, elder care, or shelter from domestic abuse. Choose CFC code 31408 and be a superhero to those in need in our community. No cape required. Amazing things happen when we stand united.
What Facebook has done, they're transforming advertising. With Google click-through, you don't really know who's clicking through. But with Facebook, you can so specify who's looking at your ads that it's extremely targeted. That's why Google is so worried, because Facebook has created this closed ecosystem. They don't allow Google search into their little private kingdom. And Google is afraid that the Facebook community will become larger than Google's.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This audio puzzle is brought to you by CenturyLink Government. Identify the federal agency problem.
Am I number E enough? All the other information is way prettier. I look fat in this network, don't I?
The answer? Insecure data. With CenturyLink's comprehensive suite of security solutions, even your most sensitive data stays protected. For a free risk assessment, visit CenturyLink.com/federal.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Jim Mears of Motorola Solutions, my guest on Industry Chatter today. It's always good to have you in the studio, Jim. I
great
appreciate
to be
your
back.
Time today. Looking forward, we talked a lot about where we are today and a little bit forward looking, but what are some of the cool technologies, things that we should be thinking about when it comes to the kinds of issues we've been discussing today, communications devices and mobile networks and so on?
I think one of the coolest things moving forward, as I said, is certainly not here today, but the blending of what in the past had been a standalone, let's say, P25 system. P25 is a standard that allow our customers to compete and vet products from different vendors. But those old hardened systems, the new hardened systems, and then the blending of the 4G technology, the D-block, if you will, which we desperately need, as I think we've talked about, mm-hmm. those blending into a unified network over the long term, I mean, that's a pretty compelling vision that our customers are driving to, the federal government's driving to. Again, the standards-based mission-critical systems that we've been building over the last 10 years will continue to evolve. Because interoperability, while it's still got a long way to go, I saw an article recently from former Homeland Security Director Ridge where he says, hey, we've come a long way in 10 years. We've got a long way to go. We need to D-block, but standards have certainly helped allow customers to talk across different manufacturers' products, which is really important in the first responder community. So I think we're moving in the direction, but the cool stuff will be the integration of the broadband capability into mission critical requirements into a unified device. And that'll be a killer app and a killer product.
Everybody can talk to everybody at that point,
yeah.
Right? That interoperability is where we started the conversation, and unfortunately, that's where we have to leave it.
That's
Thank
a great
you very
place
much
to start
for being
stop.
Here.
Thank you for having me.
Jim Mears of Motorola Solutions, my guest on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Program continues. Hour number two is right around the corner on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.